to use our main speaker for this evening, Kenny Pugh from San Diego.
My name is Kenneth P. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to ask anybody in the room who has had someone else tell them what they did last night or is actually aware that they've had a blackout, raise your hand. Good, I'm in the right fucking place. I talk a lot about appearance, clothing, the way I look. The reason for that is It has a lot to do with the way I drank, where I drank, what I could drink, how I paid for drinks. And I actually took it all the way to what does God look like. So if you hear a lot of surface, what does someone look like, or what are they presenting based on what they're wearing, or whatever, it's just a lot of my story in there. Curiously, I don't know, I'm sober 18 years. My sobriety date is the 22nd of September, 97. And this is my third tour of sobriety. I'm hoping it's my last tour of sobriety. First time I went to an AA meeting, I was 18. My dad picked me up. He'd been sober about 4 minutes, and he decided we were all going to get sober. So I would make sure I was good and hammered before he picked me up, because I wasn't going to an AA meeting without some Jack Daniels to make it a little easier. The next time I went to AA, so that was the age of 18, the next time I went to AA, I think I was 26 or 27. I may or may not have almost driven over one sister driving another sister's car. Again, it was one of those blackout things. So I went to AA because everybody in my family was really angry that I almost physically harmed a 9-year-old girl, my little sister. I didn't see the problem. She was fine. The car did not make it through the plate glass window. We're all good. Let's go celebrate that, you know, no one died. And that might sound glib, but that's really where my head was at, is things didn't go as bad as they could. We deserve to, you know, do some of this. Some background on me. My first mad crush on another person, I was 4 years old, was a boy named Kelly. And I knew within about month of describing that crush to other people that I needed to shut up and shut up now, because it was not going to end well. If I was honest about who I was interested in regarding those butterflies and that crush. And the reason I was that age and that aware of what a crush might look like or feel like is I was already being sexualized by older people at that age. So intimacy never stood a chance of being its own idea for me. It was always attached to something naked and physically a little scary. And that went on. When I was 4 or 5, they would have been 12, 13, 14 years old. By the time I was 10, they were 20. And by the time I was 12, they were 30. And it wasn't just men, but it was mostly men. So when I did my my first inventory, you know, 18 years ago, I put chicken hawks, and I can't remember their names, so I just, you know, it was a generalization of, I'm pretty fucking resentful at these men who prey on young men or boys. And I don't know if there's an equivalent in the heterosexual world, and honestly, I'm saying that to be PC, I don't care, because this is my story, and this is all I can really bring to you. This group of men preyed on me and people that look like me. My sister's experienced similar things with older men. And we come from Las Vegas, where how you look and what you can bring to the trophy conversation is currency. The way I looked had a lot to do with my social currency. Pretty much was out the door by about 15, even though I still finished high school. I would run off and try to get to California from Vegas. And I come from some people. My grandfather was an elected official, and my father was an appointed official, so I was supposed to be somebody. And boy, was I. I may or may not have engaged in a lot of residential pharmaceutical delivery. Okay, I did. I say that to let you know that if you did some felonious stuff and you never got nicked for it, making an amends for that is interesting. I'll share one of my most interesting amends, well, two of them. And I'm going to bounce around it as far as years go, and if you don't like that, just raise your hand and I'll just ignore you. When I, my second tour of sobriety, so I was in my mid-20s, I may or may not have lifted some money out of a cash drawer when I was employed by a federally insured bank. My habit was to pull money on the Friday between paydays, go out and spend that money, just get the party started with a couple bucks, and think back, this is the early 80s, so a couple dollars could be a couple drinks. And then because of the way I looked and the way I was willing to flirt and do whatever I had to do to get you to do things for me, and if it was the back seat of your car or standing on the bar, I was going to do what I needed to get the third drink and the fourth drink and the fifth drink. And then I'd turn a few tricks during the weekend or gamble or both, and then I could put the money back in my cash drawer on Monday. The reason I had a job at a federally insured bank when I was 16 is because my boyfriend was best friends with the head of personnel who was married to a woman who happened to be sleeping with another woman who was the teller school teacher. So my introduction to the business world is just fuck your way through it. And I did spend a lot of time, especially when they first started telling me my problem was drinking. No, my problem is fighting, fixing, and fucking. It's got little to do with alcohol. Alcohol makes it a little more tolerable. I was all about the drugs and the sex and the R&R thing. And it may not look like it. Sometimes people tell me I kind of look like a Barbie doll or a Ken doll or whatever. Again, back to the looks. Looks can be deceiving. I got a pass a lot. I was holding, I'm going to guess everyone here knows what that means, at a place called the Brigantine in Old Town about 22 years ago. And a DEA officer asked me if I had seen any suspicious activity. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like thinking, where is, oh man, okay, you know, and I'm pushing stuff with, because you got to push, you know, the pocket in your jacket and put a hole in it so you can hide stuff in the back. So I'm, or you don't know that, but I mean, that's what you do. And see, you know, right? You know, yeah, so anywhere to hide it. I didn't have one pocket in my coat that didn't have a hole. But this guy's asking me about something that may or may not be illegal, and I'm standing there thinking, it's me. So one of my amends, because I used to take money from banks a lot as an employee, I was sober and I had to call, and this little tiny bank had been acquired by Bank of America, and I had to call the head of security of Bank of America and tell him I borrowed some of his money. And I was not going to make that amends because I was not going to do more jail time than I'd already done. I'd been locked up for drunk driving and drunk walking. That's fascinating if you think about it. See, you know, right? And yeah, they say it's for your own good because you might fall off the bridge in South Park, you know, 30th Street. I guess I was about to fall off that bridge. So I called, and he wasn't available, and I thought, well, good, I tried, that's done. But his secretary was oh so helpful. Just give me your name and number, and I'm like, oh, no. I was just calling to tell you I did this, and thanks for listening, and something luckily just kept doing that, and I gave her my name and my phone number, and then he didn't call. And now I know he's waiting for me to do something else so he can, like, get me for two strikes. You know, it's like, and I was so nervous for several days, just a little bit of paranoia, and I've done enough stuff that helped with the paranoia that it was bad. And then finally he called, and he was this real gruff, you know, dude on the phone, and so you took some money, and I'm like, yeah, and he goes, do you remember how much? And I said, well, you know, I was always able to put it back until that one Monday morning when they fired me for something unrelated. I was late, which they should have fired me for a lot of other reasons, but they fired me for being late. And I didn't get to put, I had it in my pocket. I even told him, I'm like, I had it on me, and I couldn't put it back. And he goes, so how much? I said, really, honestly, I'm not trying to downplay it. I think it's $20, but I'm trying to stay sober, and $20 can kill me. And he goes, don't you people have meetings or, he said playhouses, but then he goes, clubhouses. And I love the you people. And I'm like, yeah, we people do stuff like that. And he goes, go to one of those places, donate the $20, mail me the receipt, and we'll call it a day. And so it was federally insured money that could have put me someplace that wouldn't be so much fun. And instead, I just got to donate to one of us. You know, and then send in the receipt. The other amends has an interesting ending, and that ending occurred in April of this year. and the crime that I committed was 30 years ago. I knew I was HIV positive at the age of 21, and shortly after my birthday, I met an ear, nose, and throat specialist who was going to make my life easier by just making my life easier because he was a doctor, and whatever that means. And I slept with a lot of his friends and might have spent a lot of his money, and I never mentioned the HIV piece, and that sat on me for a long time. Fortunately, I did get to make an amends to that man, and I was taught to make amends face-to-face where possible, and ask the person what they need, what I can do to unwind whatever feelings they were still harboring. And this doctor said to me, I understand why you're calling. I don't want to fucking know you, but thanks for the call. And he hung up. And I went to my sponsor and said, is that enough? And he said, did you ask him what he wanted? And I said, he wouldn't let me, but he has my number. And if I'm honest, I never thought about that man for 18 years. February of 15, so what's that, 9 months ago, I had 6 T-cells left. I was refusing to speak to any Western doctors. I was engaged wholly in alternative medicines, so essential oils, Reiki, massage, acupuncture, denial, not to get super graphic, but the meds make me very, 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 very physically ill. So I just stopped taking them in 2008 and went on my own way. And I almost died. I had an infection start under my tongue, and it went from a little tiny thing under my tongue to 11 giant aphthous ulcers that were eating through my palate, my jaw, and my tongue. And again, that speaks to how I look, because you couldn't see what was wrong. But I'm dying, literally, and it's just behind here. So people were like, well, you look fine, and I'm like, I had to hold my face together just to talk, and it was so painful. And I didn't want to take narcotics because I didn't want to relapse, and I had heard so many stories of people going out on back pain and then a pill, and then eventually Jack Daniels and that pill are just screaming at you till you answer that call. And several friends of mine in recovery who know me and trust me said, if you don't go get some Percocet, I'm just going to go get some off the street and make you take it. Because I couldn't swallow without crying. The pain was so severe. And then my primary care provider says, we're going to send you to an ENT, and you need to go tomorrow. So we've got the referral set up. And I said, what's his name? And he goes, Pierre. And I said, Reve? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, we have a history. Can I make that phone call and it'll let you know if the referral is good or if it shouldn't happen? And I called Pierre's office. We hadn't spoken in, like I said, 18 years. And apparently the amends that I made was well received, because he knew it was genuine and he knew it was the best I could offer in that phone call. And he goes, get your stupid ass in here and let's see what we can do. And the arrogance level was very, very high. I was prepared to be one of those people that pays penalties for not having insurance. Because, again, I got this and you don't know. You don't know what I can do and you don't know what I can afford. So stop talking to me about helping me. And this is to illustrate that even 18 years without a drink, I've made some choices that have not been helpful to being peaceful and being happy and experiencing joy the way the ninth step promises those things will happen. So I said on the phone, I don't have insurance, I'll pay you cash, and you don't have to do this. And he's like, just come on in. And that man, and I think he got a little pleasure out of this, because he stuck needles in every single ulcer and injected steroids, and I'm kicking the wall and trying to kick his nurse, and you know, I'm hanging on. And I had to go and do that 3 times. And when it was all over, I said, go back to when you first saw me. Tell me what happened to me. And he goes, you weren't supposed to live. Everybody that had that in the 80s died. Every single one of them. And we were at a loss for how to care for you people that have HIV and then this infection. Apparently it would eat through your jaw and just you'd be open down here until you die. And again, he got to stick me 11 places, 3 different times, and is that a thing? You're the thing guy, right? Okay. So I didn't know that amends was as honestly received until, I made the amends 18 years ago, and I found out in April that he believed me, that I made the amends and I was true to the process that I was shown about how to make an amends. Going back a bit, more history about me. I married a woman when I was 22 because I needed my job, the church, and my father to leave me alone. She had better coke and more money than me, so it made perfect sense, right? She's going to make, again, if the ear, nose, and throat dude can't make my life easier, she will. And I've never been what I've heard described as a gold digger because I always kept a job and paid my own bills. I just wanted to date someone that wasn't stealing my money and someone who had their own car. And I tend to just, I must have been looking real high because I always found people with lots of money. And then they would get weird. Like I had one guy break up with me because I would never let him give me money and he wanted to know that he was needed, and that's kind of bizarre. And all this is happening while I'm drinking. So I married a woman. I've been awake for about 4 days when the ceremony happened, and I've seen video of that, and wow, that was a big blackout that lasted a long time. I'm not kidding. I watched the video, and I'm like, that didn't happen. But there's video, I have been sexualized my entire life, and it's only recently that I've come to a place where I am no longer seeing it as dirty, deviant. I couldn't figure out what my role in it was. Like, any intellectual can tell a 10-year-old that the 30-year-old, you kind of didn't have a choice. And I would tell people when I was that kid what was going on, and they would say, you need to just keep quiet because my father would be running for office or whatever. There was always a reason we had to keep quiet. I have one sister I've discussed some of this with just in the last few months, and we lived a mirror image of each other's life without ever talking about it. So we're both healing. I'm 50. She's 18 months younger than me, and we're finally healing. She's sober a couple of years. I'm sober 18 years. She actually got sober before I did, and then she drank for a while. Now she's sober a couple of years. The reason I mentioned the way God looks, I lived my first 5 years of this tour of sobriety in San Diego, and a bunch of us would meet at Claire de Lune on Friday nights, and none of us really went to the same meeting, so we would all go where we went. And then we would end up there, and we would talk. And one night it was, what does God look like? And again, I've had this ongoing tape of, I know how to wear clothes that might expose a little hair on the chest, or jeans that might let you know I'm circumcised. I know how to dress to get what I want from you, and I also know how to dress to distract you enough that you're not ever going to ask me what's really going on with me. Because I look like I've got it going on, whatever that means. I know how to down-dress or up-dress based on what I need from you. And if it's going to be something really snazzy because that's all you're going to respond to, that's what I'll do. So anyway, we're sitting there, and the question comes up of what does God look like? And by that point, I'd not embraced God. I think I was 5 years sober. I've been lying for the first 5 years of not having a drink about praying because I really wanted to fit in, and I was the word desperation spoken by one of the birthday people. I knew that if I didn't fit in AA, there was no place else to go. And I wasn't going to pray to God because I've read Leviticus enough times that I've been in enough pride parades and I've been actually physically, metaphorically, but also physically hit in the head with a sign that tells me that I deserve AIDS because, I'm in love with someone named Dave or whatever. That I wasn't going to embrace it, but I also wanted to fit in with you, all of you. And you all had this story of God and prayer, and of course that's an exaggeration, but that's what my head was telling me, is you all get it, and I don't. So I'm lying. And does anyone know Cosmic Carla? Okay, yeah. Fucking Carla. So I was, So I was about 5.5 years sober, and I went to a meeting, and, who prays on there, in the morning, at night? I do. And Carla grabbed me. It was a midday meeting at the Live and Let Live Alano Club, and she made me walk around the block with her. And I was just such a hard ass. I was just hanging on. I hadn't had a drink. I was sponsoring some men. But I didn't have anything bigger than me. There was no help at all. If I had a problem or even something to celebrate, it was all alone. It was me. I would actually get dressed up for myself, if that makes any sense at all. I would make sure. I've heard women buy lingerie for themselves, but they get the guy to believe it's for him. So I was dressing up for myself. It's like I can't deal with what I'm thinking and feeling. So I'm gonna get dressed up and go out and get some attention. So I'm gonna wear really tight clothes, and they're gonna be really expensive shoes and the right watch, and I'm gonna flirt with just enough people to feel better, and then I can go home. So Carla's walking me around when I've got this plan to go get some attention. And she's like, "You don't have a God." I'm like, "What are you? You don't know." That's all I said. You don't have a lot of defense at that point, because she's right. And so she's holding on to me. And if you know Carla, she has no concept of other people's personal space. So she's just got me. You know, she's like got my arm, and she's not very... And I'm just walking with her and thinking, I hope nobody sees us. Because again, how I look and who I'm with matters so much in my head. And she goes, "I don't know." And I'll cuss a little bit because I like to cuss. But she's like, "I don't fucking know if there's a God. And I don't fucking know if there isn't a God. But what I do know is when I imagine God walking with me, I feel a little bit safer and a little bit warmer inside." And then she had this pause and she goes, "Isn't that what you want?" And by then I'm crying and hugging her. I went home that night and got on my knees and prayed to God. I was 5.5 years sober. It was the first time I accepted the idea that I didn't have to do this alone. So I'm real grateful to her, and I get to take her to lunch every now and again to this day for that. I mentioned fighting, fixing, and fucking, the three F's that kept me going. I didn't stop. I attracted people who responded to the way I dressed to get attention that diverted from how I felt. Y'all with me on that? I attracted people who were as superficial as my presentation, what I was bringing to that. And I ended up with a sponsor who sexualized me. Now, nothing physical specifically that might, you know, get a person arrested happened, but we got on our knees in the middle of the day in a park to do the third step prayer. Has anyone else done knees, third step prayer, anybody? So I had heard from a lot of people that happens. So this is normal, even though it's 20 years older than me, and normally on my knees in a park, you can finish that thought. Because that was very normal for me. I was a fraud investigator at Dun & Bradstreet. I was a three-piece suit for years, and I could tell the CFO that he was a liar, and then he'd go, "Yeah, you're right." I mean, I was that guy. And I was still turning tricks because I couldn't pay my rent and party the way I needed to party. So we're on our knees in Morley Field, midday, and we hold hands, and we're going to do that. And I've memorized this prayer, and I'm praying I don't get it wrong because I want to do everything perfect. And he goes, "Now, I got to tell you, I've always been attracted to you since the first day I met you." And I thought, "Well, you're just another chicken hawk, aren't you?" And not even in a real negative way. It's just, you're just one more of them. So AA had to happen because everything else didn't work. I've been to shrinks. I've been to sanitariums. I've been to jail. And if this is the best I'm going to get, this is the best I'm going to get. I drew the short straw, poor me. Get the little violin out. I don't care. I just need to do this prayer and get moving on. And that man continued to sexualize me verbally and other people verbally. And in fact, I saw a guy walk into a meeting a couple years later, and he got my attention because he did. And I don't even know if I have a type, but it was him at that moment. And he goes, "You think he's attractive?" And I'm like, "The whole world thinks he's attractive. Look at him." You know, I was just like so focused on that I stopped hearing the meeting, and I was focused on how somebody looked. And he goes, "Well, here's what you have to do. You have to sponsor him, because then you can't have sex with him. It's the only way to do this." And I thought, holy shit, this is the only way? I mean, it was just the information I was getting fed into what I believed about how a person looks and then how that relates to recovery or anything else. I see, and I'm not picking on women in this moment. I swear I'm not, but it's most dominant in my head in this moment. I see women show up to AA meetings looking like they're going to get that guy at 1:45 in the morning. They're showing a lot of skin. They're wearing yoga tights and high heels and going, I don't know why people don't respect me. And I'm like, and I'm really not trying to dog that person. That was me. I just didn't have the girls and the heels. Not all the time. I mean, and I did do drag once. I don't recommend it. It was Halloween. But the way people look. And so the question came up, what does God look like? I started this little bit with that. What does God look like? And again, if y'all feel it, raise your hand when if you say something that resonates. But God was 40 stories tall, and I'm 9. God is 40 stories tall with the big light behind his head, so, and it's definitely male, and I can't make out the features, and it's way up there, and this staff and a beard that goes down to the ground, and just unreachable. I can't get there. And I'm an Episcopalian by, what's that called? Communion? Baptist? I don't, not so much the Christian today. Baptism, I guess. Well, and Episcopalians, in my judgment, are just Catholic light. So I not in a bad way, it just is. And so that's what God looked like. The presentation was just so unreachable for me. I couldn't relate, couldn't communicate. And then as I'm a teen and I'm doing what I'm doing at the age of 16 and 17, I start turning tricks. I start maybe engaging in some delivery of stuff to people's houses at 2 a.m. God starts to look like my dad because, you know, he's the director of intelligence in the district attorney's office, and should he find out what I'm involved in, this could go really, really south really, really fast. And so God started to look like a very angry version of my father by the time I was 17, 18, 19. My mom successfully, even though she was drunk often and sleeping with many, 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 many men, at the age of 16, I'm getting phone calls at 5 a.m. from my mother. I don't know where my car is. I'm at the Flamingo Hotel. Come pick me up. And then she cried the whole way home, and that was just normal. My mom was very, very beautiful, and she was treated accordingly when she was drunk. She wore very, 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 very revealing tight clothing, and she was treated accordingly when she was drunk. So these are the things I know. I know that a revolving door in the bedroom is fine. Because sometimes that's what you have to do to pay the mortgage and to keep the party going. So, but my mother did, when she expresses love to me, I believe it. And I didn't get that from very many adults. So I give her that. She is able to express love as I needed it. When I was about 26, 27, making that attempt at being sober, God looked like a divorced woman that had a lot of kids. And wasn't doing it perfect, but was fucking doing it. That stuck for a long time. And then figure I'm about 10 years later, I'm like 37, and I'm at Clair de Lune. Anybody been to Clair de Lune back when it was fun? Because it's not anymore. They close at, like, stupid times now. Don't they know I need them? And so somebody said, what does God look like? And I went down that, you know, this unreachable creature, and then my dad, and then my mom. And I had been at La Jolla Speakers. I was about 1 or 2 years sober, and there was some dude in the parking lot with like a forest of who knows what living in his beard, and I thought, you know, he's here, he made it to the parking lot, I'm just going to go get him. And a few other smarter drunks than me, which most of you were or might still be, stopped me and said, wait till he comes in. And I'm like, y'all are assholes, because he's made it this far, he's right there, I'm going to go get him. And of course, I was Captain Save the World at that moment anyway. So they didn't let me go get him. And this is back when La Jolla Speakers would be 300 people, I think. Right? It was huge. It was packed. And finally, and it was several Saturdays later, he 1 foot over the threshold, just one. And a woman raced for the door. And I thought, and I looked at her. And again, based on what I know about how people look, she's in the right Chanel suit. She's in the right Chanel bead. She's got the right shoes on. And I know she's going to get rid of him. Because look at her. And look at what's living in his beard. She is not allowing this in her meeting in her church. I just knew it. I knew. I mean, my magical magnifying mind has done a number on me more than once. And isn't that a great expression? And she hugged him. And she kissed him on the mouth, and she said, welcome home. But not for us to hear. She said it to him. And I lost my shit. I was just like, when are you going to revert to type? Because that's wrong. You're not supposed to do that. And she did revert to type. She started barking orders at everybody else. I need a chair. I need coffee. I need cake. They're like, we didn't cut it yet. I don't care. You know, I mean, and I'm like, there she is. I know her. You know, I grew up around people like that. And so when they ask me what God looked like, I have to say, and that hasn't changed since then, God is a 62-year-old black woman who has a sense of style that is to be envied, and she could stand to lose about 45 pounds. Because what I watched her do was just remarkable to me, because she embraced a man who was filthy in her beautiful, clean suit, and she wouldn't let him go. She did the Cosmic Carla thing. She had his arm, and they sat next to each other. And again, she's barking at everybody else, but she was gentle with him. And I'm going to imagine a homeless person, especially if they're older and male, and begin to smell and mumble to themselves more than speak. Maybe teenagers kick them, and maybe police officers handcuff them, but I don't know if anybody holds them by the elbow and just says, welcome home. So she did something for this guy that I thought my judgment probably had not happened for him in a very long time. So that's what God looks like. My God today is more of a, I don't subscribe to a Christian God or a specific faith, but my God has a foul mouth and wins bar fights. I know this because I have a foul mouth, yet we somehow successfully communicate, and that's not meant to be glib, it's true. I cuss a lot. Or if you listen to my grandmother, I curse a lot. And I used to, when I was drunk, I would go into biker bars and hit on biker dudes. Because why not? I mean, I'm already not getting laid. I might as well get touched in some way. And that's usually after I'd had my evening of, like, turn a trick, go to Balboa Park, get this done, get that done. And then I'd end up in some kind of fetish kind of bar. And what I love is, because I got to put shoes on to be 5'8", okay? Barefoot, I'm 5'7", something. And when I was high, I don't know, I weighed 122 pounds, maybe. And I'm hitting on you. You know what I mean? A little bit thicker, a little bit taller. You would win, because you're fucking tall. And their lady always took care of me. She was always like, I got this. You know what I mean? And I would get I'd get my ass beat by a biker chick every single time, because we were usually the same size, and I'm like a gnat to this guy. He's like, ugh. And then the next thing I know is I got this woman pulling on me. Okay, tell me. Where am I? Okay. So I know my God wins bar fights, because I started many, never lost an eye or a limb, but I didn't finish any of them on my own. The most recent things happening to me, I mentioned that I was very, very ill. I did all the steps, and I read the doctor's opinion more than I read any other part of our book. I don't know that I'm recommending that to a newcomer, but at 18 years, that's where I live, is a reminder that very, very, very smart doctors said, listen to these people. They know what the fuck they're talking about. And so I dig into the doctor's opinion when I start to get smarter than myself. And when I sponsor someone, that's what I identify as doing the work. I don't identify myself doing the steps as the work. I've read bits that have described doing the work is taking someone else through the steps, not me doing the steps. I can't do that if I haven't, but taking someone else through the steps. I have to be very honest and transparent. I do still use sex, or the illusion of sex and getting someone's attention and distracting them from the real stuff going on with me. I do those things sober, because they still work. I haven't hit bottom on what it means to wear tight pants and distract you from asking what's going on. I talked about the sponsor that was less than honorable with me, to let any newcomer know, just because we're all sober doesn't mean we're all okay. And it's okay to ask people what's really going on. And maybe ask RB at Pathfinders, because I lived at Pathfinders for 9 months, and I heard RB say, get some road dogs and don't let go of them. And I love that expression. Because they're not going to be your sponsor. They're going to be in the same foxhole that you are. But you can turn to them and be like, I was just told the da-da-da-da-da. What do you think? It doesn't mean I have to listen to what you think, but what do you think? You know, so I had a sponsor that I do not speak to today because, in my judgment, he continues to sexualize people, and I'm not down with that. And I used to, there's a part in the book that says we finally see objectionable things for what they are, objectionable. And I, because of using the way I might look or dress, the way I present myself to get what I want, use sex as a tool or a weapon, but never for actual intimacy. That was endorsed when I first got sober by someone who was just fucked up in that department. So if you have a sponsor that's kind of freaking you out, maybe the things they're saying to you that are freaking you out probably for the most part are true. Like they might have something to do with this. But if it's something else, like sponsor that guy so you never get to see him naked, you might want to ask somebody if they've been told the same thing. It's just a suggestion. I don't want to dog that person in too great degree, other than I had to get away because I finally saw the objectionable behavior for what it is, objectionable. I'm honest about sometimes sex is the only thing that's going to make me not feel the way I feel, and I have to be honest with you about that so that anybody who might be fighting or fucking instead of drinking, you're not alone. I'm doing it. I don't know if anybody else is, and it's none of my business, but I do it. I was addicted to lying for a very long time, which I'm a real estate agent. Some of you are going to see some humor in that, but I don't lie to my clients. I just lie to myself. Without a higher power who gave me the things that I needed, I wouldn't be standing here today. I get to live at the beach. Well, I was very, very sick. I would walk and put my feet in the water, and that was the best I could do for 2.5 months. I changed my name legally and removed my father's family name last July because he came to me while I was sick and said, "Will you do the 12 steps of recovery so that you can be straight and give me a grandson?" And he's been asking me that identical question since I was 17, and it finally became objectionable to me. I couldn't do it while I was angry, and I couldn't do it while I was frightened. I was frightened of what the rest of the family would think. I was frightened of the money that I'm walking away from, and I was very, very hurt and angry, and a homeless man set me free. I bought a guy a $7.99 sleeping bag at Goodwill, and a few months later, he found me on Facebook, and we communicated barely. I bought him a sandwich, I think. While I was sick, while I was dying, again, it's not to be dramatic, that's what they kept telling me. He found me on Facebook and he said, "I'm now certified in the holistic modalities like Reiki and massage, and I think you need my help." And his first name is really interesting. It's Ajla, A-J-L-A. And he says, I said, "Your parents probably are kind of interesting." He's from Albany, New York. And I said, "That's not a name you might hear in upstate New York, so where'd that come from?" And he just smiled. It was a slow, confident grin. And he said, "The name my parents gave me was fine, but it isn't this." He goes, "When I became a man, I sat down with a piece of paper and I wrote down the names until one of them fit me." And he goes, and he looked at me and he goes, "Don't I look like an Ajla?" And I'm like, "You do. You really, really do. I've never heard this word before, but it's you." You know, I was like, and it snapped in my own head. My name, Kenneth Patrick, fits me like a tailored suit. Patrick had been my middle name, and I spent my entire life being told that it should have been my first name because it was my mother's favorite. Any woman in here when she was a little girl start to plan your kids' names when you're like 10? Any of you? Oh, come on. See, a truther in a room full of not so much truthers. And so my mom had known her entire life she was going to have a boy named Patrick, and my father's family being somewhat powerful wouldn't let it happen. But now I own it as my last name. The last thing I'll wrap up with is I get to be altruistic in ways that I didn't know were possible. Most of my focus is, thank you, homeless people, specifically transgender people, and I couldn't get them to believe that I wasn't doing anything more than trying to get a merit badge, because I show up and it ain't right. Joan Rivers said it best. It ain't right, it ain't fair, it's what we've got, fucking work with it. I am a middle-aged white man in North America with more than $2 in the bank. I'm very, very privileged. I'm very, very, very privileged. And when I changed my name, I got a lot of pushback from people close to me and total strangers. They're like, "Well, we have all your records under this other name. Can't you just leave it that way?" And I'm like, "You're questioning the importance of my identity. Because when I got this name that fits me like a well-tailored suit, I could stand up taller. My relationship with God got better just because my identity became more solidified for me. And again, these transgender people, especially homeless people that I would get to and try to help, they would be like, thank you, but you don't get us. You can't. You're never going to be one of us. You don't get us. And they weren't trying to be mean. They were just like, it's like an alcoholic not going to an AA meeting and getting help from someone who's not an alcoholic. Imagine that. And you're sitting there going, how can you possibly understand why it's funny to push old women out of a car on the freeway? You know, because she was yelling at me and I was drunk and I'm not the only one that did that. Well, maybe. And so I had that. I got a lot of pushback regarding my identity, my name. And I went back to Michelle, who was born Kevin, who cries a lot and is homeless. And I sat down on the curb and I said, may I tell you a story? And I told that story of getting a lot of pushback regarding my name and my identity. And a homeless person who has been treated like crap by almost everyone they've met puts her hand on my shoulder and says, I'm really sorry that happened to you. Is there anything I can do for you? And I thought, you know, maybe I was supposed to have a shithead father. Maybe I was supposed to change my name so that I could get to this person and they could say, look, he's one of us. Because Michelle went and told the homeless camps of transgender people, he gets us. Let him in. And now I can be of service to people that don't have a voice. 43% of them commit suicide successfully. And now they got somebody. Patrick Stewart said it recently. Remember Captain Picard? He said, like that matters. But he said, often the middle-aged white guy is handed a microphone faster than anybody else. I get to use that microphone to help people who are never going to be handed the microphone. Thank you for the honor of being here, and thank you for indulging me.